Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back, folks. We're going to continue our conversation with former State Representative Joe Marino and the outcome of the Ethics and Compliance Commission meeting on Wednesday about the actions of the Inspector General. There are a number of points that the Inspector General made in the public letter, some of which she points out that the $16.2 million for a garage and that the parish will not own until 2031. Talk about that, if you would.
Carl, that's wrong. I mean, the garage she's talking about that the parish isn't going to own is the other garage, the existing garage. It's a different JFI project, completely separate and wrong. I mean, she said at the last ECC meeting again this week, she said, they're attacking me because they don't like my message, but no one has told me anything that's wrong in my public letter. So I hope she's listening today. Once again, no money was donated, no public laws were violated, no bid laws were violated. It was a CMAR project, and your facts need to be at least amended on your public letter unless you want to mislead the public.
So the $16.2 million and the ownership, it has nothing to do with this project. That is another garage yep. project, which these public-private collaboratives, that type of arrangement is not unusual. I know that there are a number of public housing projects that are the same way. You actually turn over ownership to the private entity until a date certain when they are able to recruit whatever percentage of the monies that they put out to build the project, and you get title back to it at some future date. So, you know, I mean, but to put that like the way that they put it without a further explanation, that this is not uncommon in public private collaboratives, right?
It's very forward thinking to not use the old lowest bidder method. And I can give you 100 of examples where that's not going right, where the lowest bidder whether they've ever built a performance theater or not, gets the contract, okay? Whoever builds, you know, the lowest bidder gets to do the project, and then it goes over budget, and then it's not a good product, and it's no good. CMAR, what you do, you go out, and you find the contractors that you want to bid your project. You give them preliminary drawings and plans. Say, I know you are qualified, you're qualified, you're qualified. You guys bid this project with what I'm giving you right now. You go through a selection process, which is all contained in the law. It's revised statute 38:22225.2.3. And there's a process, and then you select a qualified contractor who then, this is the kicker, will give you a guaranteed maximum price. They have to submit a guaranteed maximum price. So that means if the project goes over and it's not because of anything we changed, it's on the contractor. So there is no unknown about how much this is ultimately going to cost involved in this.
And it's so done all CMAR, over the state. The CMAR shifts the risk to the contractor.
And construction management at risk. That's what it's called.
Right.
Yep.
So one of the other items that she outlines is the IG, that is, $10.3 million thus far toward a brew pub and taco restaurant the parish will own but will receive no revenue.
Right. Also wrong. The big thing they're trying to say is that that's the donation of public property or whatever. They're saying that the parish is giving this nonprofit this money. This nonprofit is going to not give the money back to the parish. There's no economic benefit at all. Well, when this capital outlay project is finished, there's going to be a three-level parking garage that is going to be fully paid for by the state of Louisiana, not $1 coming from the parish. That's the capital outlay request. And we have improved drainage because we'll have redone the whole thing. And we have a linear park. And we have a kiosk. And most importantly, at a maximum price of 10.3, I haven't even said that. I think this project's going to come in between 8 to 9 million, okay? The maximum it's going to be is around 10.3. We own, no note, commercial leasable space, prime real estate, looking out onto the river, looking across the it's a beautiful site. And it's going to generate so much economic development all around it. I mean, it is a home run for Jefferson Parish. And all we have to put up is our local match, which incidentally, too, when they wanted to pause it and look at it further, what that would have meant is the local match, which we've already had approved and certified and is part of a cooperative endeavor agreement with the state of Louisiana, we would have had to say, state of Louisiana, I know we're in year three of getting funding, but our local match, which you certified and approved, it's in question now. We're pausing it. That's the kind of damage that could have happened if we would have gone along with them sounding the alarm. You know, in this situation, Newell, sounding the alarm is like walking
so basically
into the
what,
hall and
what
pulling
the allegation away. The allegation is that the brew pub and taco restaurant pays no rent. True or not?
Not true. That's absolutely false. I actually waived the contract at them. The brew pub pays 3% for the first 30 months, okay, 3% of the gross revenue. And then after the first 30 months, and we are recognizing that they're investing $2.5 million of their
the restaurant
into the
yes.
build-out. Correct. $2.5 million from Port Orleans. And let me tell you something, that's a lot of money to try to draw into your project to say you guys are going to be putting $2.5 million into a building you don't own. And then it switches to 6% gross revenue, which incidentally is market rate. So this is the lease that we approved a year ago. And if they had their way, we would be violating or voiding a lease. Well, that's how you get sued. You say the council approved this lease a year ago. A lot of things have happened. The legislature's gone into session and out again. More money's been allocated again. We're almost breaking ground. And, you know, and this was a last minute, it was an ambush. And
I think
and
at
it's
some point,
not the way
I think
she should work.
And I remember reading some other transcripts, but somebody was saying that, you know, this is a risky venture because it's a restaurant and otherwise. But this organization is not a fly-by-night organization, right?
Absolutely not. And there was a request for proposal for them as well. I mean, this has been so out in public, so in front. There were billboards about this at the site for a solid year talking about the public-private partnership and showing you what it was. And, you know, I mean, but this is just an attempt to harm a project that is, you know, a District 1 project. And you know, I don't like to – this is my biggest problem. When you have a section in the code, in the manual for the Inspector General, which talks about independence, and it says under quality standards, which is section – chapter 2, section 2, 1. The Inspector General and staff must be free, in fact, and appearance from personal and external organizational impairments to independence. When that public records request that the advocate did showed that Jennifer Van Ranken, after the public letter was dropped, was emailing Kim Chatterlain saying, please have your staff, the OIG staff, review my slides that I'm going to start using for accuracy to your letter. How is that allowed? How is that not a violation of the independence of the office to be doing legal work for the council person? That's my problem. Well,
it shouldn't be, and it should be everybody's problem, quite frankly. So the outcome of the meeting. There were a number of people that testified, both in favor of the IG and opposed to the IG. The commissioners asked a few questions, some very pertinent questions, and they end up voting. I believe it was a unanimous vote to do what?
Punt. The attorney for the ECC said, you can appoint an outside counsel to look into the ethical and procedural violations of the IG, which is almost identical to what the parish council already voted for at their meeting to retain. But they're now taking control of it, saying you guys can appoint an attorney because they had questions and they had good questions. They even asked her, what would you do different now? And she actually responded after hearing all of the comments about how you didn't follow the law and you didn't give people a notice and an opportunity to respond. She said absolutely nothing. She would do exactly nothing different on her public letter. And that, you know, that's offensive to me. And I'm involved in the project. And so it looks like Jefferson Parish, she's right. Jefferson Parish looks pretty corrupt if you believe what's going on in that letter. Because she's saying we're doing illegal things, even though she's not specifically saying it, but she's implying it, and she's throwing around accusations, and then she's not correcting it, and then she's not amending it, and she still believes that those things in that letter are facts, and her and the councilwoman are going from civic association to civic association. And then when those people come to us and say, what are y'all doing? And we explain what actually happened, they go, oh. Well, that's not how it was presented to us. And I said, right. That's right. You're getting bad information. And that's not the role of the Inspector General to go on a speaking tour either.
In her summation of her testimony, there was a question asked why the report as opposed to anything else as an investigation. And I guess if you're trying to avert fraud, waste, and abuse, it's hard to do that on the back end if you allow it to occur, and I get that. But she says there's a question of the garage being built or whether or how much parish funds is going to have to go towards that garage and yep. where we're going to get the money to make up the difference. Well, she's already yep. presupposing that there's going to be a cost overrun. Did she ever articulate how she knows that? I mean, does she have some kind of financial crystal ball that Because under the construction management at risk, under the CMAR, you really minimize that in large measure.
Well, first of all, here's the answer to her questions. I don't know how much it's going to cost the parish to build the garage. Okay, zero. That's the state funding part. That's the 75% part coming from the state. It's going to be zero. The only investment by the state, local match, is capped at 10.3. And again, here's the rest of it, which is makes it more ridiculous to me. ARPA, the American Recovery, the money coming down from the feds to help in economic development comes to the states. The parish gets money, and the parish decides we're going to put X amount of dollars, I think it was 15 or 12, in each district. And each district councilman can use this money for a transformative economic development project. They all voted, we're not going to do something little. Use your money for something really big and impactful. That's where this money comes from, that councilman that template was starting with, and then Edwards continued with. That's where the money comes from. And so we already have that money. We already voted to dedicate it. It's already sitting there ready to go. And what better transformative economic development project is this project, which is going to employ a large amount of people? It's going to be a destination on the West Bank for people to come to this area. There's a linear park. It has indoor-outdoor dining. They're going to be doing concerts out there. I mean, it is a game changer for the West Bank. The parish owns it all, and it's already paid for. And that's the project that they're, you know. The misinformation continues, though, Newell. She keeps saying those same things that you're reading.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I've got a text here, you know, local government supporting tacos and beer. I mean, that was just a respondent. You know, it's interesting. Back in the late 1980s, I guess. No, it was late 90s. I went up to Chicago when we were doing our radio system because Motorola is located in Schaumburg, right out of the city of Chicago. And I had a friend of mine in Chicago PD, and I had him. I wanted to see their city hall and things of that nature. They had a food court in city hall. Now, they were located downtown, and they had all this public space that they had designed and built out for fast food operations, restaurant operations, and everything in their city hall. This is something that they did back in the 90s. So it's not like this is some groundbreaking revelation of commercial and government funded collaborative projects as it relates to having leasable space to the public. I built a district station in Fat City with leasable space on the first floor, and the district is on the second floor. Why? Because it serves as an economic development for Fat City, trying to encourage folks to come there and everything else. This is the traditional out-of-box thinking, you know, that you want to involve and engage in. And what I don't understand is why, and that's why I go back to the point that I made before about the IG saying it would be a better way to pay off existing debt than to enter into new projects in light of the fact that state capital outlay funds are the lion's share of the funds that are being utilized to benefit Jefferson Parish taxpayers.
Well, I mean, she still doesn't amend it to say I have some mistakes. She's still saying no one's told me anything's wrong. I mean, it's maddening. And it's forward-thinking government is what we're doing, and it's a home run. And I'm glad that it wasn't.
Now, whether or not y'all execute on it is on y'all. But the construct of this in advance, the vast majority that I know of in the state of Louisiana have been very successful.
It's not her role to do policy, Norm. I mean,
I get it. And that's the point I'm making.
It's not policy. Go on
that's
the council
the,
if you want to tell them how
that's
to do
the point
policy.
I'm making. You know, she talks about politicians. Well, she's trying to be a politician. I just don't.
She's going to accuse herself of being corrupt if anybody challenges
it. Of course, because everyone is, for sure. Right?
Attacking the messenger. That's what we're doing. We're attacking the messenger, smoke and mirrors.
And not the process. But what I heard and what I read.
Talk about the process.
What I read is about the process. And I still don't understand why you would not reach out to those involved to gain a better understanding before you put anything in writing.
Also, she doesn't talk about investigations. Okay, she made that abundantly clear. She does not talk about investigations unless she's going on the news saying, "Oh yeah, I'm issuing subpoenas," and "Oh yeah, I'm going to do an audit." Is this an investigation? And is she ever going to do it? And more importantly, please send me the final report so I can give you my response.
Well, I'm like you when you start out the letter with what we found, and then at the end there are recommendations. It sounds like an investigation to me. And there was one statement.
It's got a bill. It's got web feet.
There was one statement that she made that I know is not true. She says, in short, we don't step on other agencies' jurisdictional toes and haven't since this office was created. I know that to definitely be not true. In fact, they very much wanted to be a criminal investigative agency. They did not deconflict, and they caused all kinds of issues. I can speak with experience there. As always, thank you so much, Joe Marino, former state representative, former chairman of the Criminal Justice Committee, for visiting with us today. We appreciate it. Stay the course.
Thank you. Have a good one.
All right. And on a text line, it says, could you please mention who she is? That would be Kim Chatelaine, the Inspector General for the Parish of Jefferson. We'll be right back, folks.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. On December 7th, there are a number of constitutional amendments on the ballot, and one being amendment number one. Do you support an amendment to allow the Supreme Court to sanction a judge upon an investigation by the Judiciary Commission and provide that recommended sanction shall be instituted by the Judiciary Commission or by a majority of the Supreme Court, and to provide for the appointment of five additional members to the Judiciary Commission? Here to talk to us about it is former Civil District Court Judge Robin Geruso. She is a former member of the Judiciary Commission as well. And Judge, welcome to the show.
Oh, good morning, Sheriff. How are you?
Doing fine, Judge. So this is a big change to the construct of how we discipline judges or investigate and discipline judges in the state. Your thoughts?
It's a change. I'm not sure it's a big change, but it's a change that wants to correct a problem that's not there and make it even more complicated to discipline judges. So I'm at a loss to understand why adding five members to something is going to make it more efficient.
Well, obviously,
in my mind, it would make it less efficient.
Right. I mean, this has been the move of the administration to increase the number of folks and have more elected officials appointment. So the additional five members would be two from the Speaker, two from the President of the Senate, and one from the Governor, right?
That would be correct. So there would, instead of nine members, there would be 14 members. Right now, there are three judges that are appointed by the Supreme Court. One of them is a Court of Appeal judge. The other two are district court judges. Then there are three lawyers that are appointed by the Conference of Court of Appeal judges. One of the lawyers has a young lawyer, and they have to have 3 to 10 years of experience practicing law. And the other two are experienced lawyers with 10 years or more. And then there are we already have three citizen members, and they're appointed by the Conference of District Court Judges.
So what is it that we're trying to correct? Because it seems to me, with some of the reported cases, that, you know, a lot of the frustration that I hear of folks are operational efficiency of courts. And I can say this without reservation. Your court was not one that would that there was a deficiency there. It was very efficient. And I used to hear that from a lot of folks. But I don't hear that about all judges, and it seems to have really created a frustration, not only amongst the bar, but citizens watching and citizen litigants in court, and they're looking for a place to turn and a place to go to.
Well, I think I sat on the commission 20 years ago, so it was a good while ago, and I chaired the commission in the last year that I served, and there were, I think, two criticisms of the commission at that time. One, that the process took too long, and two, that it was shrouded in secrecy. And I think in the 20 years since I've served, the Supreme Court and the commission have gone out of their way to correct both of those things. For example, when I served on the commission actually conducted all the hearings about the judges. Now, the Supreme Court appoints hearing officers to hear the cases, so more than one case can go on at the same time. And the commission reviews the transcript of the hearing officers, and they hear oral argument, but they can hear many more cases when they meet than they could have during the time that I was sitting on it. They also, so the efficiency has increased greatly. And there have been complaints about how long something takes. So the commission's actually started tracking investigations that took longer than 18 months. In 2017, there were 7 of them. In 2023, there were 4.7. And as of October of this year, there were only 3 investigations that were pending longer than 18 months. And as far as the transparency is concerned, or being shrouded in secrecy, the rule was changed in 2020, so the commission has made a lot of general information available about dispositions. And actually, if any of your listeners want to go onto the Judiciary Commission's website, they're more than welcome to do it. The website was not there when I was serving on the commission, and it talks about the disposition of cases. It tells you what cases are set for hearing. You can actually, as a member of the public, go sit in those hearings, which you could not do when I was on the commission. So I think the commission has done and the Supreme Court have done a really good job in addressing the complaints. And I don't see how adding more members, making it more complicated to coordinate meetings. It also makes it way more expensive because you got to pay all the travel expenses and lodging and meals for anyone that doesn't live in Orleans Parish where the commission meets. And I don't see any reason to do it.
So the commission, because I'm getting a lot of texts, folks don't really understand, is not a full-time position. It's a part-time voluntary position. And I'm not sure, is there a compensation for same?
That you do not compensate it. You are not compensated for it. It's a lot of extra work. And it's not compensation, it would just be paying expenses. If you don't live in Orleans Parish where the commission meets, you are compensated for your travel expenses and for your you have to stay in a hotel, so you're compensated for your lodging, and you're compensated for your meals. But
right.
That means more people would be coming to the commission and having to pay for that.
Which is not unusual. It would seem to me that if we're talking about the efficiency, there would be more attention as it relates to increasing the amount of staff, not the amount of members
absolutely.
Of the Judiciary Commission.
I think, Sheriff, you've hit on a very important point. If we want to make this more efficient and we have extra money to pay, it would make way more sense to me to hire more investigators and maybe another special counsel to investigate the matters. And the special counsel actually acts in a sense, I hate to use this word, but it's true, as the prosecutor, where they would be the one trying the cases in front of the making a recommendation to the commission to investigate, and then actually trying the case in front of the hearing officer.
Kind of like having a screening office in the district attorney's office, right?
Exactly. They'd be doing the screening, but they'd also be prosecuting them. And it's
right.
You know, you have to you have to remember that judges are elected by the people. And so you have to prove by clear and convincing evidence that the judge has done something wrong to actually have discipline against that judge.
So one of the other things two things that change. One, right now, my understanding is that the Supreme Court has the procedure where they embrace or not the recommendation by the Judiciary Commission as it relates to discipline, right?
That's correct. They review the finding. Go ahead.
This would change, though, right? Because they could on their own volition a review and recommend something maybe more harsh or more lenient than what is recommended by the Judiciary Commission.
Well, they can do that already. That's why I don't understand that. I mean, the Judiciary Commission could say, we believe you should discipline this judge and we believe you should sanction them. And and there are a lot of Supreme Court cases on judicial discipline where the Supreme Court does something differently than the commission is recommended. So that's not unusual. And the Supreme Court has the power right now in egregious cases to suspend a judge before the Judiciary Commission has had the opportunity to have the hearing. For example, if we picked up the paper and found out a judge had been charged with a felony, the Supreme Court has the power to act already. So that confused me about the amendment, and it actually just shows a lack of understanding of how the commission and the Supreme Court interact with one another. The Supreme Court doesn't just rubber stamp what the commission has done.
So what there is another provision in here that is, in my view, somewhat interesting. What is the significance of providing for the addition of malfeasance while in office to the list of specified actions for which a Supreme Court may pursue disciplinary action against a sitting judge?
Well, they already can pursue it.
Malfeasance, if the underlying malfeasance is kind of, as judge, I mean, I'm preaching to the choir, is a generalized term, right? And there's a number of actions that fall that constitute malfeasance that it seems to me they already can find a problem. I'm trying to keep it out of the legalese language so that everyone grasps what we're talking about. But, you know, that there's conduct that constitutes malfeasance that they can already make a finding on, right?
Well, of course, that's unnecessary. And maybe some of your listeners would be interested in the kind of cases that came in front of the commission when I sat on the commission.
Let us take a break, and we'll be right back, and we'll pick up the conversation there, Judge, if you don't mind. We're visiting with Civil District Court Judge retired Robin Geruso and a former member of the Judiciary Commission of Louisiana about Constitutional Amendment Number 1 that you will be voting on on December the 7th, or early voting, which started this past Saturday, that you can vote on now. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with former Civil District Court Judge Robin Geruso, also a former member of the Judiciary Commission. Judge, for the sake of brevity about what we were going to talk about the types of cases, I'm reading kind of the flavor on the text line. And I think folks are a little bit confused about one thing. The Judiciary Commission is not really able to Monday morning quarterback the use of discretion and broad discretion that judges have, as long as their actions do not clearly violate a statute or the Constitution, right?
Well, you're absolutely correct. I mean, you're absolutely correct. The Judiciary Commission is not an appellate court. The kind of things that you're talking about would go to an appellate court to decide whether or not the judge used their discretion properly. Now, if a judge had a pattern of ignoring what a court of appeal or Supreme Court said, or ignoring what the law said, then the commission may be able to investigate and recommend discipline to the Supreme Court.
But if you have a series of cases where you can give someone 5 to 99, let's say, on a criminal sentence, because I think that's where a lot of folks' frustrations lie, and the judge repeatedly gives the lower end of the discretion as it relates to sentencing, there isn't anything the Judiciary Commission can do about that.
You're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct. There has been a recent case about a judge somewhere upriver between here and Baton Rouge, Judge Fifi, who routinely refused to sign search warrants, and he actually has been suspended for 6 months,
right,
because he showed a pattern of misconduct.
Right, because that is an obligation of the office, right?
Sure, it wasn't discretionary. Once they proved that there's probable cause, he had an obligation. But if it's discretionary, you can't discipline a judge for that.
So let me ask you this.
There's can maybe some not of the, return him to office.
Right, and that's the importance of taking your privilege as it relates to voting, to heart.
Exactly.
I think people are frustrated, too, because there are repeated reports of judges just not simply showing up for work. Is
that
within the purview of the Judiciary Commission?
It absolutely is, because, well, you may not have a 9 to 5 and you get an hour for lunch kind of schedule.
Right.
Judges are obligated to hear their dockets. They're obligated to get decisions out within 30 days of submission of a case. And when I was on the commission, we did have several judges that we recommended sanctions for decisional delay. It's certainly not fair for someone who needs child support to have a judge wait 6 months to issue a decision from the time the case has been submitted to the judge. And that's just one example.
Final thoughts, Judge?
Final thoughts is I urge your listeners to vote no on this amendment, because it is not going to make the commission more efficient, and it'll make it more expensive, and it also interrupts the really important idea of judicial independence.
Well, Judge, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule. We truly appreciate it, and it's good to hear your voice again, and best of luck.
Nice to talk to you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Judge. That's former Civil District Court Judge Robin Geruso, and also a former member of the Judiciary Commission of Louisiana. On both of these topics that we talked about today, both the IG as well as this, we are reaching out to those who have a differing opinion as to those matters, and we'll have them on in the coming days. Thank you so much. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.